Getting your ID checked when you're way over the legal age. Hey, sometimes you're in the mood for a few drinks. Big bottle of Merlot over a romantic spaghetti dinner, clinking beers floating in an icy cooler beside the tent, Jell-O shooters before the bars in college, or bubbly flutes of champagne for the big New Year's bash. Whatever your pleasure, whatever your poison, that's cool with us. But before you get down with the booze-filled pour, you need to get out that door and run down to the liquor store. Word to your sister. Now, if you're like me, you go through four distinct phases when you get your ID checked, and they go a little something like this. Stage one, underage rage. Okay, you're not quite at the legal limit, but you're close enough to push it. Problem is, the pimply dude at the cash register ain't buying your fake ID, and you get busted at the scene. So close, yet so far. You storm away with your Friday night plans dashed, burning with a bit of underage rage. Stage two, new booze buzz. When you hit the legal limit, it's time to fight for your right to party. You wheel your shopping cart around the store with pride, picking up a bit of this, a bit of that, and beaming like a schoolgirl when the cashier asks for your ID. "Why, no problem at all," you say loudly, grinning widely at the tired, bleary-eyed folks behind you in line. "Thank you so much for asking." Stage three, jaded 20-something. You're 4 or 5 years over the limit, and the novelty has worn off. Now it's becoming a pain to dig through your wallet to find your driver's license before scooting home with a six-pack for the game. Can't the clerk clearly see you're 26? Does he think you could have grown that goatee 5 years ago? Stage four, the fountain of youth. After a while, the gray hairs add up, and you start buying white wine for the backyard barbecue instead of lollipop-flavored vodka coolers for the all-night rager. You know your way around the store, you smile warmly at the clerk, and suddenly, you get asked for your ID when you least expect it. Oh, baby, when it hasn't happened in years, getting your ID checked can be a full-body buzz. You fish out your card excitedly, peeling its faded face and dog-eared corners from your bag, and your eyes twinkle as you take a sip from the fountain of youth. Sometimes, it even happens on your birthday. Awesome.
The smell of rain on a hot sidewalk. There's just something about the smell of rain on a hot sidewalk. It's sort of like the rain cleans the air, completely hammering all the dirt and grime particles down to the ground and releasing some hot, baked-in chemicals from the pavement. It smells best if it hasn't rained in a while and the sidewalk is scalding hot. Then it sort of sizzles and steams up into a big, hot, intoxicating whiff. Awesome.
That friendly nod between strangers out doing the same thing. Gliding down the bike path on a Saturday morning, you whip by somebody pedaling in the opposite direction and give each other a nod. For a moment, it's like, "Hey, we're both doing the same thing. Let's be friends for a second." Also applies to seeing someone driving the same car as you, walking their dog past you on Sunday morning, or squeezing the melon beside you in the grocery store. Awesome.
Really, really old Tupperware. Found in dusty kitchen cupboards and dishwasher top shelves across this wide, great land. Really, really old Tupperware is as handy today as it was 20, 30, 40 years ago. That famous Tupperware burping seal still holds strong, and you can bet that banana bread will stay moist, those celery sticks crisp, and that leftover lasagna fresh. Yes, all is well in this tight vacuum-sealed chamber of taste preservation. Really, really old Tupperware is mostly found in three colors. Stovetop green, traffic cone orange, or the core of the sun yellow. Optional features include novelty 1950s floral patterns or deep tomato stains from that time someone put chili in there and shoved it in the back of the freezer for 2 years. One thing I enjoy doing is thinking about all the different kinds of food a particular piece of Tupperware has Tupperwared shut over the years. Apparently, Tupperware has been around since 1946, so we're talking about the full taste bud timeline. From lard burgers, creamed corn casseroles, and jello salads, to hemp brownies, parsley soup and tofu cookies, to pizza pockets, TV dinner leftovers, and astronaut ice cream pellets. Really, really old Tupperware has been there, sealed that, and lived to tell the tale. It's a throwback to the simpler life, when things like airtight seals meant something. Something real. Something honest. Something worth believing in. Awesome.
Getting gas just before the price goes up. Here's how it all goes down. Well-dressed fat cats sit around a dark mahogany table in the boardroom of a nondescript high-rise deep in a dense metropolis on the coast of an exotic country. Anonymous and alone, they sip scotch, share pictures of new yachts, and make plans to jack gas prices for the long weekend. Cufflinks clinking on crystal glasses, celebratory cigar smoke filling the room. The gas execs laugh deep belly laughs, high-ten each other, and then file into limos to take them back to the airport. And of course, just before they leave, everyone does a shot of high-octane gasoline to keep the memory fresh and the evil juices flowing. At least that's how I imagine it. After all, gas prices seemingly rise whenever you need to fill up for the weekend. It's a constant game and a constant battle. But that's why there's something fun about watching those prices drip and drop ever so slowly throughout the week, and then pulling in to fill your tank just before they zoom sky high again. Honestly, when you nail it just right, you walk away laughing, patting the extra $3 in your pocket and daydreaming of how you might spend it this time. Lottery ticket? Windshield washer fluid? Maybe some beef jerky for the ride home. Either way, you'll be sitting pretty when you cruise by the station on a full tank tomorrow and notice the prices are hiked back up. You came out to play the gas game this week, and you won. Awesome.
The Push Off. Dad's holding you steady as you pedal, pedal, pedal. Then you suddenly realize you're still going. So you look over your shoulder and he's way back there, waving and cheering you on. You're riding your bike for the first time. Awesome.
Wearing sandals when you shouldn't be wearing sandals. I went to college in a small town that got hit hard by weather extremes. In the fall, the summer winds would quickly cool and sharpen, ripping into your cheeks on the way home from class, leaving them red and finely shredded like you'd just applied blush with sandpaper. In the winter, the roads and sidewalks would be covered in piles of wet slush, little bombs of slippery ice dirt and road salt that would explode onto your pants and shoes and leave nasty stains when they dried. In the spring, the snow would melt away, leaving soggy grass everywhere. You would see that grass and think it was solid, but your foot would sink into it. Cold little mud bubbles rising around your shoe from all directions and soaking right into your sock. It was like walking on a peat bog covered in smushed worms and last year's dog poo. It was not pretty. And so my roommates and I were left with just two options. One, try to predict and adjust for the weather. You know, wear lots of layers, carry umbrellas on sunny days, build a collection of waterproof boots, and start using phrases like, bunker in and venture out. Two, ignore it completely. Well, we chose option two, and we faced the consequences. We got windburn and had sleet slip down the back of our t-shirts. We got dirt soakers and then permanently stretched our socks while peeling them off at the front door. We got dry legs, we got bone chill, and brother, we got rain hair bad. But eventually, we got good at ignoring it all. My roommate Dee was the master of ignoring the weather. The biggest proof being that he wore sandals year-round. Wind, snow, rain. It didn't matter.
The toes need to breathe,
he'd say sternly.
Breathe.
And he'd emphasize the point with a sturdy lip and a firm strapping of the Velcro. Then he'd slap on his heavy backpack, take a deep breath, give you a wink, and trudge out into a blizzard, navigating ice patches and slush piles like a pro. Sure, there was the occasional bad day that came with being chronically unprepared for Mother Nature's worst blows, generally involving a dirty puddle splashing all over you from a passing truck, or being unable to feel your toes until you put them on the radiator for 20 minutes. But you made it through. And come on, there is something great about wearing sandals when you shouldn't be wearing sandals. It's liberation from shoe shackles, freedom from the oppressing sock, and a violent rebellion against those frostbite warnings on the Weather Channel. People of the world, let's face it. If we can come together to take down the shoe, then really, nothing can stop us. Awesome.
Getting off an airplane after a long flight. B.O. clouds dissipate and float away. Wailing babies quit wailing at the luggage bay. Your cell phone works, so you call friends up, say hey. And all your scrunched up, bunched up, hunched up muscles just relax as you stretch them out now, feeling A-okay. You're out of the window seat, out of the aisle. You're back on 2 feet, so just walk away and smile. Awesome.
Picking up a Q and U at the same time in Scrabble. I'm the world's worst Scrabble player. Every time it's my turn, I see other players lose interest as they get ready for a long wait. I feel bad, so I stare at my pieces, trying desperately to conjure up a word longer than 3 letters, or else suffer their complaints that I'm really clogging up the board. A couple minutes will pass before somebody says, "Hey, you know what this game should have? A time limit." Ha 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 ha. And everybody laughs and smiles at me. I look up to grin and then stare back down at my letters quickly. I stare at those letters and stare hard. A few more minutes of silence will pass, and then I look up, grimace slowly, and offer one of my 2 classic lines. 1. Sorry, guys. I've got, like, all vowels over here. Or 2. It's like consonant central here, guys. I'll just be another minute unless jiggerfaquol is a word. A couple people nod and smile at my lame joke. Someone idly turns on the TV and starts flipping channels. And another will generally grab a section of the newspaper and head to the can. I frantically rearrange my letters over and over again, silently praying rebuke, jinxed, or fibula will appear on my little wooden tray by accident. My nerves fraying, my heart drum thumping, I'll eventually put down a lame 4-letter word like bill or lamp in an act of desperation. 8 points. I'll whisper to the scorekeeper while turning the board and nodding to the other players to move along. See, part of my problem is that I draw letters like J, Z, or Q at the beginning of the game, and they end up haunting me all the way through. That big Q is the worst of all. It holds its powerful 10 points over my head, just daring me to draw one of the 4 U's in the game so I can lay it down. I spell my letters out in arrangements like Q, I-C-K, Q, O-T-E, and Q, I-E-T, ready and waiting for a U at any time, but generally no dice, or at least no dice for a while. I got cut, or I got nothing. And so you see, that's why, in my books, there are very few better things to happen to you in a board game than picking a Q and a U at the same time in Scrabble. I say it beats building 2 hotels on Boardwalk in Monopoly, or drawing a perfect brontosaurus in Pictionary during an all-play. If I get that Q and U together in Scrabble, then it's all me all the time, baby. Doors open, and I quite quietly and quickly quash all quibbling questions and quack queries from my competitors. And you know how that makes me feel. Awesome.
Old folks who sit on their porch and wave at you when you walk by. What do you picture doing when you retire? Lounging amongst big umbrellas on sunny beaches? Taking the grandkids to the zoo? Cropping a serious vegetable garden? Or turning your wood carving hobby into a lucrative craft fair business? Well, whatever you choose, can I recommend that you also make time to just sit on your porch, sip some lemonade, and look up to smile and wave at people when they walk by? Because other than cutting the little wedge of your neighbor's lawn, lending out your snowblower, or collecting someone's mail while they're away, I tell you, nothing says friendly neighbor more than a couple old folks sitting on their rockers and just flashing those gums and waving those palms when you walk on by. Awesome.
The first scoop out of a jar of peanut butter. When I peel the top off a new jar of peanut butter, I like to pretend I'm a scientist peering through the world's most powerful telescope, catching Earth's first glimpse of a new, strange, and distant planet. "It's got a smooth surface," I exclaim to the lab of giddy professors standing breathlessly beside me. "Yes, it's a beautiful, airless landscape, untouched, undisturbed, and brown." Because seriously, that's what a just-opened jar of peanut butter looks like to me. I almost feel bad thinking about what I'm about to do, because it's just so perfect, smooth, and dense. But I put some bread in the toaster anyway, grab a spoon from the drawer, and then go right ahead and dig that spoon in there deep, catching a heavy glob of thick PB when I pull up, a loud, wet, satisfying slop plopping out of the jar. It's a great feeling. After that, I'm an artist. I can leave a big gaping hole right in the middle of the jar. I can do it up fancy and twirl and swirl the PB around a little, or I can painstakingly carve a moat around the outside, leaving a perfect flat island in the center that becomes more and more unstable with every passing day. The options are unlimited. Really, I think getting the first dig in a jar of peanut butter is the kitchen equivalent of stabbing a flag into the moon and claiming it as your own. I mean, you mark that peanut butter. You brand it. You add your little stamp and you put it back in the pantry, ready and waiting for the next big schlomp. Awesome.
Hearing a stranger fart in public. What's funnier than hearing a stranger fart in public? Well, sure, it can happen in a bank lineup, hotel lobby, or subway car. It can happen in a restaurant, movie theater, or local bar. But the funniest of all has got to be the elevator fart. That's the king of public farts for two main reasons. One, acoustics. It's almost always dead silent in an elevator. People usually keep quiet, stare firmly at the front door, and wait for their floor. Any whisper or laugh echoes around the box with full force, reverberating loudly for all to hear. So a giant rippling fart popped out by a bald businessman in a suit holding a briefcase in front of him? That's like a 21-gun salute. Two, time. If you're climbing a high-rise, you're spending maybe a minute or two with these people. It's you and them, locked together. Hearing a stranger fart on the sidewalk is one thing. Hearing a stranger fart in a tiny enclosed room is another. Nobody can escape the full experience, from big bang to first whiff to total elevator saturation. Hearing a stranger fart in public is great, partly because of everybody's reaction. There are really four main types of fart reactions you see. Concealed laughers. These folks purse their lips tightly, pop open their eyes, and try not to laugh. If they're with friends, then the sight of their friend also trying to hold in a laugh can be too much, and they suddenly explode into full-blown belly laughs. The business class. Folks in suits often try to pretend that nothing happened.
Nope, everything's just chipper here. I don't smell anything at all.
Their only tells might be a very subtle step away from the culprit and a few extra looks at their watches. Deep sea divers. These folks try to hold their breath as long as possible. They hear the fart and it's, come on lungs, don't fail me now. They're the ones with the chipmunk cheeks who eventually pop and gasp desperately for air when the door opens. Innocent children. Little kids are always the funniest. I once heard a child in an elevator say, Mommy, that man just farted, with a full-on finger point right into the well-dressed ass in front of his face. But hey, I guess if you're going to fart in a kid's face, you deserve to be called out. Yes, hearing a stranger fart in public can be a tiny, hilarious moment in the middle of any day. If you're the farter, I say be loud and be proud. We've all been there, so no need to be embarrassed. If you're in the audience, I say enjoy the hilarious social faux pas and resulting reaction in the room. So, thank you, strangers farting in public, for adding a great bit of comic relief to the middle of our day. Awesome!
Perfectly toasted toast. A bad burn, and you've got black crumbs and a dry middle. A lukewarm bake, and you've got a gummy center and soft crusts. So push the button down, twiddle the knob, and dial up some perfection. Awesome.
When someone unjams the photocopier for you. A jammed photocopier at the office is a terrible scene. Toner fumes fill the air. Plastic doors are swung open and crumpled papers lie wedged tightly in the machine's plinko-bored torso of hot springs and bright green clasps. And there you stand, at the scene of the crime in your pleated pants and button-down shirt. Yeah, I'm guessing the last thing you feel like doing right now is dropping to your hands and knees and poking your fingers into that steaming engine of paper trays and twirly knobs. That's what makes it so great, when a bugle blares softly in the background and out pops the king of the office from around the cubicle wall. Yes, it's Unjammer Man. That young techie kid from the IT department who declogs the photocopier in no time flat and is happy to lend a hand. Your lips curl into a big smile, and you hug your expense report, while knobs are twiddled, clasps are fiddled, and the copier quickly starts humming like brand new. Now that someone's unjammed it for you, you're back in business, baby. And you're loving it. Awesome.
Reading the nutritional label and eating it anyway. Sometimes you just gotta peek. As you unwrap the chocolate bar, peel open the cheeseburger, or scoop up that second bowl of ice cream, you can't help but turn the package around to glance at the nutritional label on the back. And guess what's waiting for you over there? You got it, baby. 64% of your daily saturated fat intake. 76% of your cholesterol, and a couple big buckets of carbs. Then there's the quick pause, involuntary eye twitch, or ashamed look at the person munching salad beside you. But I hope, after that brief moment of self-doubt, you just keep going. You just keep scooping it in. Sure, you might have to turn the label away, avoid sodium for the rest of the day, or give a shrug and say, hey, it's okay. But I hope you keep going. Hope you savor it slowly, and hope you enjoy every last bite. Sometimes you just gotta read the nutritional label and eat it anyway. Sometimes you just gotta live. Awesome.
when you're watching one of your favorite movies and you realize you don't remember how it ends. You know the feeling. Your favorite characters are introduced, the story kicks off. A couple plot twists and turns seem a bit unfamiliar, and it suddenly dawns on you. You have no clue how the movie wraps up. No, you can't remember who the killer is, who dies, or if the cats ever get married. You can't remember the ending at all, and you're loving every minute of it. So you dim the lights, snuggle under the blanket, shush up your chatty husband, and stay glued to that screen, because it's like, hey, guaranteed blockbuster. Awesome.
The smell of the coffee aisle in the grocery store. Harsh fluorescent lighting, slushy wet floors, and the cloudy stench of raw fish welcome you into your friendly neighborhood grocery store. After circling tables of green bananas, wobbly paper towel towers, and piles of day-old bagels, it's kind of nice to stumble upon the coffee aisle and just take a big sniff. Awesome.
That pile of assorted beers left in your fridge after a party. My friend Mike has rules for hosting parties. They go like this. Under 25 years old, party is BYOB. You can tell people if you want, but they should know. Bring your own beer. Bring your own mix. Bring your own bulk pack cheesy puffs. 25 to 30 years old, host should have wine and beer stocked and there should be snacks available. You're an old fart now, so there's a bit more party responsibility. Try to squeeze a trip in to pick up some booze between renewing your mortgage and seeing the doctor about your kidney stones. 30 to 40 years old, all of the above, plus an open bar. If you follow Mike's rules, this decade is going to hit the pocketbook a little bit. Over 40 years old, open bar, plus catering staff. Prime time, baby. But those are his rules. My rules are, if you're coming over, bring a chair. See, because we rarely provide people with anything. No drinks, no seating, no toilet paper in the bathroom, and definitely no old butler with a pencil mustache walking around in tails asking if you'd like an endive covered in swan liver and truffle oil. Instead, we stick a piece of paper on the front door telling you to meet us in the back, and then help you get started on the 2 6-packs you brought over. If you're lucky, we might have a leftover bag of stale nachos kicking around, or maybe some puddings in the cupboard. If not, we'll need your credit card to order a pizza. I am an extremely cheap person, so I get a kick out of the random assortment of drinks left over in the fridge the morning after a party. You can basically play detective to figure out who came the night before. Buzzy energy drink with vodka. Night shift worker trying to stay up, cans of domestic beer, grad student on a budget, oversized brown bottles with flip-top stoppers and lots of consonants on the label, yuppie couple or Europeans, sugary vodka coolers, college girls, craft beers with names like Old Flag or Rocky Tundra, hipsters, fancy bottles of port, British conservative party. Man! I love that random mishmash of assorted beers and drinks in the fridge, mostly because it makes me feel like a better host next time people come over. Awesome!
Staring out at calm water. Awesome.
Blowing out all the candles on your first try. Keep the spit to yourself and just let it fly. It's time to get windy. Awesome.
Sneaking McDonald's and hiding the evidence. Trouble bubbled at my friend Scott's house one night. See, earlier in the week, Scott found a used McDonald's Chicken McNugget sauce container wedged between the car seat and the door in the Honda Civic he shares with his wife. He dropped his keys in there, and when he slipped his hand down to fish them out, he came up with a sticky, crusty barbecue sauce container instead. His wife, Molly, was caught grease-handed. In Scott's mind, their sturdy New Year's pact to eat healthy suddenly dissolved into a dimly lit puddle of lies and deception. Lucky for me, Scott decided to raise the issue one Monday night while we were all watching TV. Here's how it went down. Scott: "Oh, hey, I dropped my keys in that annoying spot between the car seat and the car door earlier today." Molly, curious as to where this is going: "Okay." Scott: "Yeah, but when I went to pull them out, I found something else instead." Molly, slightly confused: "Okay." Scott raises eyebrows slowly and smiles. Molly scrunches eyebrow and turns head in confusion. Scott: "A McDonald's barbecue sauce container." Molly, guiltily: "Oh, no." Then there was a short, silent pause. And then we all just burst out laughing. Because, seriously, we've all been there, man. Sneaking in those secret McDonald's drive-through trips and ditching the evidence. Yep, gotta make sure you've scooped all the fries off the bottom of the bag, wiped the salt off your lips, checked your shirt for ketchup spillage, and safely filed the excess napkins away in the glove compartment. It's a delicious, guilty pleasure, and your secret is safe with us. Just remember to roll down the windows, pay with cash, and play it safe out there. And never, ever order the nuggets. Awesome.
Your family car growing up. Hanging out with friends late one night, dim music playing in the background, splayed haphazardly on a fat, squishy couch. My brother-in-law, Dee, started waxing nostalgic about his family's big, old 1991 white Chevy Suburban. He just broke into it, too.
"That monster seated 9 people. I swear to you, honestly, 9. There was a bench in the back, a bench in the middle, and a bench in the front. I remember when my parents bought it, I said, 'Why not get the captain's chairs in the front?' And they were like, 'No, that's just not practical.' But I guess the benches did come in handy. My dad drove our entire baseball team around. 14 12-year-olds wedged in tight and twisted. We called it the team tank. Ha ha, honestly, man, I miss that old beast." And then he just smiled softly, shook his head, and stared absently at the remote control on the coffee table for a minute. Dee's wistful late-night rambles got me thinking. For my sister Nina and me, nothing beats sitting in the backseat of our 1984 Pontiac station wagon with brown paint, brown interior, and classy fake wood trim on the outside. The backseat in this logmobile was about 8 feet away from the driver, but a world apart, really. You could talk and play games out of earshot, all the while looking and laughing straight out the back window, distracting people behind you on the highway. In the summer, the metal belt buckles would grow red hot and scald your skin when you buckled up. The cup holders were full of sticky remains from the half-dozen spilled Cokes that didn't get sponged up by the handful of McDonald's napkins stuffed in there. The air conditioning was temperamental. The windows wouldn't roll down all the way, and there were no entertainment systems or talking maps. You invented your own fun and sat patiently on the dark fabric seats, deeply stained from the time somebody sat on a hot banana. So what was your car? Was it a 69 Dodge Dart? A Chevette in classic dull gray? Or 95 Chevy Lumina van? Was it a monstrous 68 Impala? A 54 DeSoto? Or a bright teal 91 Ford Taurus? Whatever it was, I bet it sure does give you a trip down memory lane when you see that car. The same color, the same style, just driving around town like nobody's business.
or maybe fixed up real nice at the antique car show. Or maybe coasting calmly on cruise through your brain every so often. Steering up some memories. Awesome.
Eating a free sample of something you have no intention of buying. Why, hello, little cup of strawberry kiwi punch.
How you doing, pepper dill crackers? Don't mind if I do, tiny salami wrapped around a piece of melon.
Yes, eating a free sample of something you have no intention of buying is a great way to stay on top of what's happening in the grocery store. You swish the new drink, chew the new gum, toss back a tiny cup of the new pasta dinner, and introduce your taste buds to a little surprise. Assuming you don't actually like the product, maybe you do what I do and pretend you're going to buy it anyway so you don't hurt the sweet, heavily lipsticked sample lady's feelings. So you pick up the box of dry crackers, salty salami, or all noodle, no cheese lasagna and say, $4.29? Not bad, not bad. And I get a 50 cents off coupon too? Then you smile back at her, toss it in your cart, and say, why not? Thank you very much. Then you roll out of sight and guiltily drop it in another aisle.
Awesome.
Sneaking under someone else's umbrella. Okay, who's the smart one who brought an umbrella? Because I know it's not me. No, when the sky cracks up and the rain smacks down, I'm the one wearing heavy jeans and a thick spongy sweater that soaks up everything and turns me into a swampy slab of peat bog. I'm drenched. I'm dripping. I'm ice chilled to the bone. But that's what makes it so great when it starts coming down and out pops a giant umbrella from a friend who offers to give me shelter for a few minutes. Yes, if your special someone is packing some giant nylon heat, then I think it's fair to say you're smiling high, your clothes are dry, and you're rocking the streets under a tiny little patch of awesome.
Finally remembering a word that's been on the tip of your tongue for so long. It's like throwing a pail of cold water on all your smoking inner head parts. Gears unjam, lines start rolling, and you settle back in the restaurant booth with a satisfied smile on your face and just blurt it out. Parcheesi! That's what it was called. Awesome.
When someone offers to toss your dirty clothes in with their load of laundry. While flipping channels mindlessly one day, I ended up at the fast money round of Family Feud, just as the host said to the contestant, "Name a household chore you don't mind doing." The contestant flashed a split-second look of massive confusion before reluctantly spitting out an answer. When it was the second guy's turn to answer it, he flashed the same look. One ended up saying vacuuming, and the other went with washing the dishes. Neither got the top answer, which was doing laundry. So they unfortunately went home with empty pockets, flipped inside out with flies buzzing out of them. But you know what? I'm with them. Who knew people liked laundry? That can't be true. For me, laundry has two major strikes against it. One, time. Laundry requires a huge time investment. You can't just set it and forget it like our trusty old pal dishwasher. No, washing clothes means an afternoon in and out of the laundry room or a night reading tabloids at the laundromat. And you have to be on the ball ready to rebalance the washer, move clothes to the dryer, and fold shirts before they get wrinkled. Two, effort. I am baffled by the laundry sorting process, and have trouble interpreting that fancy hieroglyphic triangle-square-circle language somebody invented to ruin my clothes. For all these reasons, it's great when you're lazily watching Family Feud on the couch and your spouse, roommate, or sibling trucks by carrying a basket full of clothes. If you're lucky enough to get that, hey, need to throw anything in here? Then it's showtime, so get going. You have maybe a minute or two before the washer starts filling up, so now's your chance to drop everything, run to your dirty clothes, and start flinging out the bare minimum you need to get by for a few days. Do it fast, run back to the laundry room, and thank them profusely as you toss your clothes in the pile. Then, it's back to the couch for the triple money round, where you can rest easy, knowing you'll have some freshly rinsed undies for tomorrow morning. Awesome.
The moment at a restaurant after you see your food coming from the kitchen, but before it lands on your table. Somebody shushes, conversation hushes, and all eyes flicker with delight as you watch your sizzling, glistening meals cruise out of the kitchen and slowly descend in front of you. Awesome.
Terrible businesses run by children. When I was about 14 years old, I signed up for something called Junior Achievement. It was a happy-go-lucky nonprofit group that promoted business and entrepreneurship skills in children. Or basically, it was a bunch of kids in a room every Thursday night acting like middle managers with adult supervision. My group came up with a business called Rock Creations. This was a clever play on our core product, cheap homemade rock necklaces. We thought it was a brilliant fail-safe plan. After all, who likes necklaces? Everybody, of course. And how cheap are rocks? Pretty darn cheap, man. We spent one Thursday at the beach, the next one painting, and a final Thursday drilling holes and tying string through them. We figured it was a solid plan, well executed. Sadly, after a few weeks, we realized we'd made a huge mistake. We bet all our chips on a losing hand. The necklaces failed to generate enough buzz and excitement at the flea markets, despite our screaming, rhyming chants at terrified housewives. And we quickly tumbled into the red, piles of dead inventory and drill bit invoices mocking our poor judgment. But then, like any good business, we evolved. We quickly changed our name to Rock Cal Creations and printed off a quickie run of cheapo laminated calendars. We tied on a dry erase marker, slapped some magnets on the back, and went door to door, neighbor to neighbor, selling these reusable fridge calendars for $4 a pop. Well, we managed to sell enough to get back in gear. We started to make money and established a strong partnership with the lady in the markers aisle at Staples. Yes, it all ended well, but not without some late nights under a dim lamp with a dollar store calculator, a stack of graph paper, and a pile of pencil crayons, trying desperately to finish the numbers for our annual report, which was actually printed on the inside of one of our folded-up calendars. It was a great experience, and it really got my buzz going for running a business. That's why I think it's always fun when you see children running some sort of strange, hilarious, or terrible business. Because really, you're just watching them learn things they don't learn in the classroom and have fun doing it. They're learning how to sell, picking up social skills, and jumping right into the whirring gears of the marketplace. And honestly, they're doing all this by just getting out there and giving it a shot. How cute are the twins selling lemonade on the street corner? The gymnastics team running the barbecue outside the mall? Or the kid who takes your grocery cart back if he gets to keep the 25-cent deposit? Those kids are all playing the game. So we say, go on, kids! Do it well! Next time you're selling some rock-hard cookies or salty date squares at a bake sale, sign us up. Because we're not just buying some mild indigestion, are we? No. We're investing in the future. Awesome!
frozen walls of air conditioning hitting you on hot days. Sometimes after a day of walking around in blistering summer heat, I come down with a bad case of gross face. People, I'm not proud of it, but on those steamy days, a nasty combination of shiny forehead sweat, downtown street air, and dried up sunblock gives me a mask I can't shake. Yes, my otherwise flawless, milky smooth complexion gets slathered with the drips, and suddenly I'm cruising around town with pit stains and a t-shirt sweat glued to my back. If you've been there, you know, it's a sticky, sweaty slog. But there is good news. Invisible, frozen walls of cranked air conditioning exist just beyond the front door of the nearest coffee shop, post office, or convenience store. Just pop in to experience a frigid slap of ice-cold air right in the kisser. When you find these hidden gems of sub-zero bliss, it's like momentarily trading your slimy sweat mask for a new face. Glistening, wet necks get an ice-cold sponge down. Stinging eyelids freeze to ice. And your disgusting, hot-baked face gives a relaxing smile as it's shotgun blasted with a chilly round of awesome.
Catching somebody singing in their car and sharing a laugh with them. It's late, it's quiet, and you're stuck at a red light. Casually, you glance to your left and notice a muted explosion of furious head-bopping, furrowed eyebrows, and silent wailing inside as the driver rocks out alone and in the zone. And there's just something worth smiling about when you observe that passionate display of pure private pleasure only a few feet away. Suddenly, you're the producer in the booth, watching your struggling artist hit the high notes in their tight sound chamber on wheels. Yes, they've tried for years to get clean and make it off the streets, but now you're finally smelling a hit and a future. So maybe you bop along for a few beats, catch the same song on your radio, or lock eyes with them for a second and share a warm and heartfelt laugh. Maybe you feel a tiny flip in your heart as you connect with a total stranger for a few fleeting seconds. And maybe it makes you a tiny bit happier. And maybe you smile a tiny bit more. I say we salute all the highway rockers of the world. Thanks for brightening our day and making us laugh at the Reds. Rock on and keep belting them out, because you make the world shine brighter and make our long drives home a lot more awesome!
Snow stepping. Snow stepping is when you're trudging through the snow wearing shoes, but someone ahead of you wore boots, so you get to step in all the nice snow holes they made for you. Awesome!
Taking off your shoes on a long car ride. Treat your feet. Say you're enjoying the backseat of the car, your shaggy locks whipping in the wind, your hands sailing carelessly out the window, and your head lightly bopping to the faint Buddy Holly tune on the AM dial. But your feet, they are not fine. They are not carefree, and they ain't bopping to no beat. No, they're slippery, salty, and sweaty, wrapped tightly in a hot pocket of suffocating socks and shoes. Yes, buried deep under dense layers of cotton, wool, and leather, your aching soles are itching for some sweet release and a breath of fresh air. So just let them out, friend. Yes! When the car slips onto the side roads, the bus hits the interstate, or the plane tips up for liftoff, it's time to tug those laces and pull your paws right out of the sweat cave. Sock removal is optional. But what's not optional is rubbing your feet against that little bar thing that hangs down from the seat in front of you on the bus or airplane to give your stiff, aching soles the massage of their life. How good does that feel? So next time you're going to the grocer, going faster than a roller coaster, remember that breaks like this will rarely come your way. Ah, hey. 'Cause every day life seems a little faster. Things slip up, plans turn into disaster. So ditch your kicks and find a little escape. A hey. Awesome.
Getting the eyelash out of your eye. Eyeballs do not want to be touched. Have you ever put fingers, algae-filled lake water, or shampoo in there? Yeah, that gets your eyes screaming in pain pretty quick, doesn't it? Unless you're using Baby No More Tears shampoo, of course, in which case feel free to lather your eyeballs right on up. No worries. But seriously, your eyes have their own plumbing system, so they're pretty self-sufficient. Technically, they're called tear ducts, but they may as well be called eye toilets because they just flush your eye out. Nope, no need for any assistance, folks, because your eye toilets have it all under control. Dust, dirt, tiny little microscopic bugs, flush away. Your eye toilets are great at their job, unless, of course, a rogue eyelash gets in there. When a rebel lash quietly unhinges itself from the confines of your eyelid and attempts a poorly planned escape to freedom, it's not good. If you're like me and are cursed with poorly attached eyelashes, then your lashes just give up and die all the time, flipping down into your eyeball and scratching you right in the cornea. Your eye toilets start flushing madly, but to no avail. That lash is sticking in there tight and is not budging. I don't care how many bar fights you've been in or how many times you've been shot. You know as well as I do that having an eyelash in your eye is incredibly painful, incredibly annoying, and requires intense focus to get through. You might even have to try one of these eyelash-removing methods. The pinch-and-squeeze method. This is where you close your eye tight and pinch and squeeze all your lashes outward, hoping to grab a tiny piece of the rogue lash and pull it out. I recommend doing this one first to see what happens. You miss here, and you still have plenty of options. The eye blower method. Sometimes you need the help of a friend. They can either perform a surprise blow to prevent you from defensively closing your eye, or they can perform the surgical technique where you lie down on a bed and hold your eye open while they blow right at the eyelash. That last one takes trust and a very dry, stiff blow. Think birthday candle blowout, not warming your hands at the bus stop. The hard winker method. A solo sport. This is where you just keep winking your eye really, really hard and hope the lash will eventually pop out. Not a bad technique, though sometimes the act of hard winking just forces that eyelash in there deeper. This one's a gamble. The eyelid flapper. My friend Scott taught me this method when we were kids. You pinch the skin of your eyelid with your fingers and keep popping it in and out real fast until the lash gives up and lets go. This method is gross to look at and comes complete with a marvelously wet and disgusting suction sound. The wash. If nothing else works, you can always just splash some water in there. Or if possible, use one of those dusty eyewash stations hanging out in the back of the wood shop. I've always wanted to see someone use one of those things. They look like they're from a 1950s version of the future. Look, whatever your strategy, one thing's for sure. You aren't doing anything until that eyelash comes out. You might get the job done in 5 seconds, you might work at it for 10 painful minutes, but whatever the case, whatever your style, it sure does feel good when it finally drops out of your eye. Suddenly the sun rises again, the weight is lifted, and your life can get back on the road and just keep on trucking. Awesome!
Finally figuring out how your hotel shower faucet works. The hotel shower faucet is a 7 a.m. brain teaser. You strip down and peel back the flimsy white curtain to size up the challenger, and you find it staring back at you. A clump of shiny dials and spouts with made-up marketing names like Temporal, Relax-A-Shower, or Aqua something. Sometimes that shower faucet goes clockwise, sometimes counterclockwise. Sometimes you have to turn it past cold to get hot. Sometimes you pull it toward you to get it going. And once you eventually get it flowing, you face another challenge. Getting it to stop coming out of the bathtub tap and start shooting out of the shower faucet. Your reward for solving this mystery a few minutes later is an ice-cold spray down your naked, shivering body. Finally figuring out how your hotel shower works is like jumping into the cockpit during an emergency and landing the plane with no lessons. You were just woken up and thrown into a tough situation with no instructions, but you managed to figure it out and save the day. Yes, you're a clean, freshly scrubbed hero. Later on, when you leave the steamy bathroom in your scratchy white hotel towel, be sure to pause for a few moments in the hallway and give detailed advice and directions to all the future showers of the morning. They'll thank you for it. Awesome.
Talking about how much the meal you're eating at home would cost in a restaurant. There's the new item on the shopping list, the big soup pot or roasting pan you haven't used in a while, and a couple hours of commotion in the kitchen. But then everyone takes a seat, and out pops a puffy quiche or simmering curry complete with exotic side dishes. And as drinks are poured, plates are filled, and everyone starts digging into the meal, somebody lobs up the big question, "Hey, what do you think this would cost in a restaurant?" And it's a great conversation starter. Because now, in addition to the feeling of eating good food with friends or family, you get a nice little bonus cheapskate high, too. Awesome.
When you arrive at your destination, just as a great song ends on the radio, there's really nothing like pulling up in the driveway and shutting off the engine just as that final cymbal crashes or that wailing guitar solo slowly fades into perfect silence. If you time it just right, you'll miss the start of the commercials and you'll be rewarded with the song replaying itself in your head all day. Awesome.
Saying the same thing a sports commentator says just before they say it. Because at that moment, you go from being a lazy potato chips and naps fan lying on the couch in a crumb-covered pile of sweatpants, bedhead, and BO to an insightful sports critic with a sharp eye, quick tongue, and backup second career. Awesome!
Orange slices at halftime. When I was 6 years old, my math skills suddenly took a steep tumble. So my parents whisked me off to the eye doctor, who twiddled a bunch of knobs, and eventually concluded that this little squinter couldn't see the blackboard. Unfortunately, instead of asking me to drink a glass of carrot juice every morning or just sit closer to the front of the class, he wrote me a prescription for some thick Coke bottle glasses and sent me on my way. Being the only kid in first grade who wore glasses was no fun. I was four eyes, Dr. Spectacles, and blindy all in one recess. To make matters worse, they didn't make many glasses frames for kids in those days. At the time, the store had only one pair that fit me. A thick red plastic set that had to be held around my head with a black elastic band. Yeah, it's true. Not only was I cursed with blurry eyes, but I had a side case of pinhead, too. It was embarrassing arriving at school looking like Steve Urkel, only without the spunk or sassiness. Anyway, it didn't take long for those glasses to become the bane of my existence. I broke them about once a week. I fell off someone's back in the schoolyard, crashed into my sister running around the basement, and got pegged with snowballs on the way home from school. I ran into a fire pole on some old dangerous playground equipment, stepped on them getting out of bed, and left them sitting on couches and chairs around the house. Once I even broke them 2 days in a row. And it was